This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, folks. Welcome to Auto Central. You're brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. In the lineup this week, we are discussing SA Festival of Motoring. We've got Lawrence in studio. Lawrence, how are you doing?
All good, all good.
George?
How's it, Ty?
Huh? Good, and you? Lack a weekend?
Yeah, no, lack a weekend. Didn't fall off any bicycles.
Oh, fantastic. I see the arm is recovering slowly. Yes. And, well, that's always good to know. And then we have Constantine van Vieja from Mesha Frankfurt, from SA Festival of Motoring.
Hello, good morning.
Did I get that right?
You're absolutely right.
Oh, fantastic, because I think I cocked it up the last time. But I was practicing, but nice to know that even though it's a V, it's pronounced as an F. But that's obviously how it's said where you come from.
That's right.
Fantastic. And otherwise, how are you doing, Constantine? All good?
Very, very well, yeah. The preparations are going very well, so we're very excited this year for our show.
Fantastic. Well, we'll get into that shortly. We're just going to jump into the news section, and please feel free to get involved and say what you need to say. Opinions always help and count. But first off, just in the news, crazy week the last 2 weeks. Lots happening in the industry, and I see that the UK have decided to come to the party, and they're going to ban the sale of fossil fuel burning vehicles by 2040. So that's quite a big look. They're obviously following suit from the likes of France,
yeah.
And obviously, you know, the Swedes with Volvo have said that by 2019 they're gonna you know, have cars that have all got electric engines and plug-in hybrids. But yeah, the UK following suit.
You know what? It's a good thing. You know, I can't remember the exact year, but I think it was the early 2000s. San Francisco had an electric car boom, and the petrol companies killed it, and it went away. If it wasn't for that, we would have been 10 years ahead of where we are today with electric cars. So you know, the fact that the governments are getting involved means that you know, the advent of electric cars are going to accelerate even faster than they are.
Well, I think everyone's saying that they want to get rid of, you know, fossil fuel burning or petrol and gasoline vehicles, obviously because of the environment and the amount of emissions and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you think about it, we've had this problem on our globe for a long, long time. And my personal opinion is that 2040 is a little bit too late. If you have a look at what, you know, the likes of Tesla's doing in the States. Mm. And look, I'm glad that they're going to do it, but I'm sure they could bring it forward a bit as well.
Well, I mean, if you think about cars, it hasn't been that long that we've been burning fossil fuels in cars. I mean, it's been, what, since the early 1900s?
Yeah.
So it's been, you know, just over 100 years. I mean, it's a long time, but the Earth's been around a lot longer than that. So if this is really just a dent, you know, if you think about it statistically, 100 years in the lifetime of the planet.
Oh, it's nothing.
Is nothing.
Yeah, you wouldn't even see that on a timeline,
exactly.
Really.
So is 2040 that bad in the scheme of, you know, thinking about it from a blip?
Gives everybody a chance to sort of catch up.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Well, I mean, 2040 it's too late because I'm selfish and I want to see electric cars, you know. Look, I know we've got them, but not in the extent that obviously the Americans and the first world countries are driving electric
cars. I mean, I think if the companies, if the manufacturers accelerate their production of electric cars, then that's a deadline that will be beat by, you know, can be beat by a decade or two.
Well, look, I mean, all the OEMs are jumping on board. Everyone is, you know, producing electric vehicles, and they're just going to obviously speed that up to take on the likes of
Tesla.
Go South Africa. But listen, something that I wanted to point out to you as well, not point out, but just discuss a bit, is if we ban fossil fuel burning vehicles, what is that going to do to the industry? And I mean, if you think about not just the OEM, the guys who are manufacturing the cars, but car parts, I'm talking spark plugs and fuel injectors and the guys that are manufacturing these types of products that are going into vehicles. It really, I mean, the article says that it's going to create upheaval.
Well, if you think about what happened to, or what's happening to print and newspapers and printing presses and all of the ancillary businesses that that center themselves around the print industry.
Yeah.
Same thing happened with the internet. You know, it's something that, for me, it's an evolution rather than you know, something that's bad.
No, for sure.
Other things are gonna start coming out of the woodwork with electric cars. You
well,
know?
It's a natural progression, yeah. Isn't it? So someone who's manufacturing spark plugs, they would obviously have to realign and readjust and start producing parts that might go into electric vehicles, or do you think we're going to see the end of these kind of businesses? But new businesses will come out of this.
Probably the latter, and you'll see new businesses come out of it. I mean, if we think about our transition from a print business to a digital business, a very small percentage of the company's team is able to actually make that leap.
Yeah.
So you know, the younger kind of generation that's into that sort of electric car, the production, understands the electronics, understands the technology. I don't see a spark plug manufacturer changing too much.
Too much. Yeah. So, but I think it is going to bring around positive change. Constantine, I mean, you obviously travel a lot. You know, you obviously overseas quite a bit. You've obviously seen electric vehicles on the roads, and you know, what's it like in Europe at the moment?
Look, I mean, it's exactly what was said before. So there will be complete new kind of business coming up because the whole infrastructure has to change with charging stations. So that means you have to have a network where you can actually pre-book your next charge. Mm. So there's a lot of service providers, there are a lot of new businesses that will come out of this transition.
Yeah.
And one of the most interesting stories I've ever heard was, like, I was in the Audi Museum in Germany. And when Audi just started to manufacture cars, someone really high up was asked, do you think the automotive will ever, you know, getting to like a scale business? And they said, no, I don't think so, because we don't have enough drivers. So it means it shows exactly, you know, there was still this pre-perception that you need to have like a, you know, you would never drive cars by yourself. You have a driver. And so we just have to open our minds, because there will be new solutions coming up. When the industry changes, new solutions will come up, and yeah. Some companies will survive and some won't. But that's basically how it is in every industry, yeah. And it has been for many, many years.
Exactly right. I mean, you look at the Model T Ford. When Henry Ford started manufacturing, he wasn't the only manufacturer in the world.
Yes.
He started manufacturing the Model T Ford. It took 12 hours to assemble one Model T's chassis.
Just the chassis,
12 hours to manufacture one. And he said, no, bugger this. This is just, you know, and everyone accepted that it took 12 hours to assemble a chassis. And he was not accepting of the de facto kind of 12 hours.
Yeah.
He put the conveyor belt system in place, effectively the production line, and brought the chassis production down from 12 hours to 1 hour.
Jeez,
so I think the same thing's happening now. You know, there's certain people who just can't see past what we have currently, and new industries will evolve as a result. Yeah. Look at Uber and what they did to the taxi industry.
Exactly. Just quickly, I mean, how long do you think it's going to be before South Africa sees an influx of electric vehicles? Look, we've got the Nissan Leaf in the market at the moment, and there's obviously the BMW. I think it's the R3, but those have been
Volvo.
Deemed the Volvo first wave EVs. Do you think it's going to be 10, 20 years before South Africa? I mean, I was saying to my son the other day, he's 9 now, so in 10 years' time, is his first car going to be an electric vehicle? And for me, in my head, it makes sense that it is.
So if I had to look at the perspective in relation to the internet.
Yes.
In 2008, we were probably about 5 years behind Europe and America. As we sit here today, I would guess that from an internet point of view, we are maybe 2 years behind the rest of the world.
Okay.
From the technology that's here, the infrastructure, we may be 2 years behind.
Yeah.
So that acceleration leaves South Africa, in my opinion, in a place where we're probably a couple of years behind the rest of the world from an electric vehicle point of view, but that acceleration will
It will speed up.
It'll speed up, yeah. And we'll catch up.
Yeah.
So you know, if you had to think about, I'd say maximum 5 years, yes. But mm-hmm. that gap will get shorter over yeah. time.
And I think the biggest problem in South Africa is obviously the recharging and charging stations and that infrastructure. To run an electric yeah. vehicle. You know, if you're just going to the office and back, that's fine. You can use your home to do that.
Yeah. I mean, look at fiber to the home.
Yes.
You know, we're now everybody is getting fiber to the home.
Yeah.
And 5 years ago, it wasn't even a kind of. You know, you couldn't even imagine what it would be like.
Everybody was still on the ADSL band.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And one big challenge or needs to be accelerated is policies, like political policies. At the moment, there's no advantage for car manufacturer to bring a Leaf in. You still get the same amount of input duties, and actually in some instances actually disadvantaged from an input duty point of view. So if the policies come along, the political policies making it easier for electric vehicles,
yeah.
then you will suddenly see a massive boom. So I think it's going to grow very, very slowly for the next 2-3 years, and then suddenly we're going to see a boom, and then you'll see like a massive
second wave yeah. of
the second
of EVs
wave.
into the country,
and then automatically the infrastructure and everything will follow. But but I think that one of the first steps that need to happen is a political policy to make it beneficial yeah. for
so
electric vehicles.
You're talking obviously, you know. Less duties, you know, tax
Import
breaks
tax.
And
Correct.
All that kind of stuff mm, for driving an electric vehicle.
Because you can see in Europe, it only really took off once those things were in place.
Yeah. So where they actually had to dangle a carrot and say there's a benefit
Correct.
To driving an electric, not just for yourself.
Well,
no,
it goes down to the
end
consumer. So
yeah.
if there's a break on tax from an importer point of view,
yeah.
then that goes down to the consumer and it becomes economical.
Well, exciting times. And I mean, we're obviously going to keep a close watch on that. And well done to the UK for coming to the party. And we can't wait to report on the next country to jump on this bandwagon, you know, in 2 weeks' time. I see Ford have implemented their second phase of the Kuga recall. Phase one, obviously, the recall was the problem with the rerouting of the coolant lines, and they had to replace these affected components. And I see they've now implemented phase two of the recall. And I think it was some odd 4,660 odd vehicles that were.
Last week when I went into the office, I saw a newspaper article on one of the lampposts. Another Kuga goes up in flames. And I just sort of did the hashtag facepalm.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, they've obviously, you know, I think they've handled the situation pretty well. I haven't heard too much about it outside of obviously when you know when those cars were going up in flames, and I think they have sorted out most of the problem.
Yeah, I think this time they're ahead of the message, you know, and that's always key to a recall.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of car manufacturers have had recalls and things do go wrong, but you know, you got to get ahead of that communication, because if you're not ahead of the communication, the consumer will take you out.
Yeah, so you got to preempt it before Twitter
exactly.
gets a hold of you.
Yeah,
yeah, and I think
that's
what
key,
they've done.
That's what they've done this time. So they're ahead of the message, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, so hats off to Ford for doing that. I don't know if you guys see, but there was a teen in the in California. A teenager pleaded not guilty Wednesday for felony charges of vehicular manslaughter and drunk driving after she lost control of her car while live streaming on Instagram and recording a crash that actually landed up killing her baby sister.
I'd like to flip and follow that story, because you know America's pretty harsh on stuff like that.
Well, you know, I thought about it. I don't think intentionally anyone would want to do that.
No.
Okay.
No.
Any normal person, let's just you know say that. And she was obviously on the phone, driving, hands off the wheel. She's recording this entire thing. Her sister lands up passing away. But if you read the article further, she's actually got six felonies against her, prior felonies for drunk driving, you know, under the age. So this kind of makes me think, hang on a sec.
There's a behavioral issue.
There's a behavior. You know,
some
you've
people
been
just don't deserve
yeah, you've been naughty before, and now you're out there doing it again. And,
yeah,
you know,
that's
unfortunately.
It's not going to bode well for her.
No. So she's under 21 now, and they're looking at 12 years in jail for this Obdulia Sanchez.
Wow.
So shame. Not really nice, but what can you do? Just don't drive with your phone in your
hands.
Let
it be a message to other people not to do it.
Yeah, you know, any distraction in the car is a bad distraction.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it is, but particularly phones. I can't tell you how many people I see in the traffic texting.
No, it's all the time.
It's because I drive a high vehicle.
Yes.
You can see into other vehicles, and
yeah.
It's ludicrous the amount of times people are sitting with their phones in their hand,
You know, it doesn't matter how fast or slow you're going.
Now, I think if you had a robot and the robot's red, you've got a couple of minutes to do what you need to do, but you don't need to be driving it.
Not while that vehicle's moving.
No, exactly. Anyway, this goes on from a story from last week. Famous Takata airbags. A Sydney lawyer has announced a class action lawsuit against Toyota, Honda, and Mazda seeking refunds for cars fitted with these faulty airbags. There's a subsidiary said in a statement that there's a process in place and that fixing the affected vehicles remains a matter of urgency. This is what Toyota in Australia are saying. But again, those airbags causing trouble and someone's, you know, taking these guys to court now.
Doesn't it seem to you like it's Takata's the problem?
They're bankrupt and they're closed.
And well,
but then, but they're still putting their airbags into these vehicles.
They've already fitted to the vehicles.
You know, so it's not surprising that that somebody has come up and said, "Well, here's a lawsuit. We want it changed."
Yeah, and then I see that move over Toyota, move over Volkswagen, the world's largest automaker by volume. Now, for the first time, is Renault-Nissan, the Renault-Nissan alliance. And it sold 5,268,079 vehicles in the first half of 2017.
Who did they take over from?
They took over from Volkswagen and Toyota.
And Toyota.
Yeah. So Toyota and Volkswagen obviously just behind them.
Yeah.
But Renault-Nissan, there's an alliance, but they're obviously completely, they owned separately. The shareholders are separate. And we were talking in the office about, does that make them the biggest
in terms of market cap?
And I see that Tesla actually surpassed BMW not so long ago. I don't know what the shares are doing at the moment. But
they took a dive when Volvo made an announcement. And I don't know whether it's linked or not, but... you know, I'm not a specialist in that area, but now that the Model 3 is out on the road, you know, I would imagine that the company is going to hold its water.
I think so too. I think Tesla is poised for great things. A Clifton parking bay that raised eyebrows for its 990,000 rand price tag was bought by a German investor this week. They sold a parking bay in Camps Bay, so obviously it's a parking bay with a view, for just under R1 million.
Where did you buy it from?
Do you ever try to get parking in Camps Bay?
Yeah, no, it's terrible.
No, look, but I mean, but guys, $1 million for a parking bay.
But who did he buy it from?
Well, he bought it from an estate agent. Then I actually tried to get hold of the agent this morning. Yeah, I phoned Sotheby's this morning.
Yeah.
The number on the John McDermott's profile on LinkedIn, because I obviously had to stalk him to get his number, put me through to their Plettenberg Bay branch. I then had to get hold of the Plettenberg Bay branch. Didn't even know that there was a branch in Camps Bay. So they, I was a little bit, but that's...
But how do you, I mean, what I can't understand is how can, because I would imagine that that parking bay is sold by the council and not by a private individual. Because
unless it's owned privately. Is it on a piece of private property?
Maybe it is. But I would imagine that all of those Camps Bay parkings on the road are owned by the council because they're on the street.
So it says, yeah, the bay which overlooks Clifton's first beach is situated on the roof of a luxury apartment complex on Victoria Road.
Ah, okay. So it's private.
So it's privately owned, and they've obviously sold that bay for...
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, that's just the... That was the cheap parking bay.
So go buy houses in Camps Bay and then sell the roof parking for $1 million a shot.
Exactly. But 24 hours later, the same German oak bought a 25 million rand apartment in Stellenbosch. So he's bought a nice 25 million rand apartment in Stellenbosch, and he can drive to Camps Bay, and he doesn't ever have to wait for parking.
Gee whiz.
Until the Valleys are there in December.
He can't get out of his parking bay.
Oh, no, until somebody goes and parks in his parking bay.
Yeah, exactly. Just two more quick stories because we want to get into F1 quickly. I see the Austrian police to hunt down speedsters with a Porsche 911 Turbo, so that's quite a nice
car. Guys in Dubai have been doing it for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's pretty much it from the news last week. So... George, let's get into Formula One. I know that the guys are on a break at the moment. They've got a 4-week summer holiday kind of.
Yeah, they've got a 4-week summer holiday break. I mean, just remember the other day they had two races in a row. So I think the break is well deserved. But the Hungarian Grand Prix
It was a great Grand Prix nonetheless, and I see there was a bit of position switching, and you and I spoke in the office. So maybe if you can just unpack what happened in that Grand Prix?
So the Ferraris were on pole in second. They locked out the Mercedes, and Hamilton wasn't in the running. But on the start, there was a bit of chaos. But what turned out happening was Raikkonen and Vettel were 1-2, and Bottas was 3, and Bottas let Hamilton pass because the team said that Hamilton was lapping faster than Bottas was lapping.
Okay.
And chances were that Hamilton would be able to pass Raikkonen if Bottas let him through.
Yeah.
So the agreement with Bottas was, if you let Hamilton pass, we'll give you five laps for Hamilton to try and pass Raikkonen. Mm. If he can't pass Raikkonen,
then
Hamilton will let you pass again. But what ended up happening was, he didn't pass Raikkonen. He couldn't lap faster, but he lapped faster than Bottas was lapping, which meant he built a 12-second gap between himself and Bottas.
Yeah.
But he couldn't pass Raikkonen. On the last corner, he had to literally almost bring the car to a standstill for 12 seconds for Bottas to pass, so that Bottas could take third slot.
I mean, this has happened before. I think it was 2002.
Team orders.
Also with Ferrari. That was with Rubens Barrichello, am I right?
Yeah, so Schumacher was always the lead driver, and Barrichello took the second slot. And the same thing's happening with Ferrari now with Vettel and Raikkonen. But it's very, I don't have a problem with team orders. What you want to do at the end of the day is you want your the driver, one of your drivers, to win, and you want to get as many constructors points as possible, and that's good for the team, and you've got to be a team player sometimes.
I just hope they don't lose by 3 points at the end of the season, because then they'll be kicking themselves, won't they?
Yeah, I think the philosophy that most of the teams are taking is that they won't have a lead driver until there's a significant enough gap in the points. But that leaves an interesting potential set of events through the rest of the year, in that Bottas isn't very far from Hamilton in terms of points.
Yeah.
So Bottas could very well still be in the running for the championship.
Well, we've got a 4-week break, and can't wait for F1 to kick off again. I see there was a MotoGP. The guys, the motorbike riders are back from their summer holiday. And I see Honda's Marc Marquez beat Danny Pedrosa and Vinales in the Grand Prix this weekend. So quite an exciting race. It was a bit of wet weather. There was some strategic thinking right up front. Marquez went out on wet tires, realized that it was going to dry up, and quickly swapped bikes. And from there, the race was pretty much
A done deal.
Yeah, so quite nice MotoGP from the weekend. So that's the F1 wrap. And we've obviously got Constantine in studio here to talk about SA Festival of Motoring, and I think we're gonna jump into that right away. And then what we'll do after that is we'll chat to Lawrence about the Peugeot 3008. Lawrence, is that right?
That is correct.
You've been driving that?
Had it on launch.
Yeah.
What a machine.
What a machine.
What a machine.
Okay, well, we look forward to hearing about it. Well, Constantine, like we said earlier, welcome to the studio. And we are extremely excited, not only to be talking about SA Festival of Motoring, or is it the SA Motoring Experience? Yeah, so I think, first of all, tell us why the name change.
Okay, so basically, what we realized in 2016, when we started, or the initial show of Festival of Motoring, was there were some elements that worked and some elements that didn't work. And in order to make the show better, we basically re-innovating the show every year. So in 2017, our focus was going to be on the driving experience, on the motoring experience, rather than the festival part. So that's why we said we're gonna change that name to SA Motoring Experience. We changed a bit the concept with the car manufacturers. We changed a bit the way they are promoting themselves. On the bottom line is, we're going to have many, many more cars that you can actually actively experience. For example, the Peugeot 3008 is going to be at the show as well. Peugeot is going to be here 2017. So there are going to be many, many more active cars where you can get into, where you can actually drive, be driven around, and so on and so forth. And that is the motoring experience part that we wanted to highlight. So we're going to have less music acts, but more cars.
So more cars. So, I mean, this festival is really geared up for, I mean, you don't have to be a petrol head,
yes,
but I think you cater, from what I've seen, for absolutely everybody. So from, parents with young kids. I remember the VW stand from last year. They had this ski slope and my boys went absolutely wild on that. And you know, it was hats off to VW, because I think they had five or six stations that kids had to interact with. But what are the parents doing while they're watching their children play scale electric cars? They're looking at the vehicles that are on offer. So, you know, that was really, really awesome. Right. So obviously kids, young families, petrol heads, just general motoring enthusiasts, and I recall being there last year. It was absolutely fantastic.
But so, I mean, the production of the show you were saying earlier on is more like a theatre production, where you're trying to get the consumer immersed in an experience.
Right, and the concept hasn't changed in a way that once you're on the show, You don't have to pay extra for any of the experiences.
Brilliant.
And the good news is we even dropped the ticket price from last year to this year. So everything goes up in price. Our show goes down in price. So we are now, if you buy online, it's 150 Rand to get onto the show. And then once you're in, you don't pay extra for the driving. You don't pay extra for the experiences. We're even going to have a bungee jump there. You don't pay extra for that, because it's all about experiencing, the motoring world, if you will, and celebrating the motoring world, because that is an industry that is worthwhile celebrating.
So out of all the experiences, I know there's some that you're still kind of trying to land, but those that you can kind of tell us about, what experiences are you going to have there?
Well, the most important is we're going to have a lot of cars that you can get into and drive on the actual racetrack. So we're going to have a couple of categories there. You have a self-drive category where some car manufacturers allow you to actually drive by yourself on the Carl Army racetrack with a professional next to you. You're going to have then several categories where the car manufacturers have a driver and you can get into the passenger seat and drive then around, including some supercars. Obviously there are some peak times when it might be get difficult to get into those, but in theory you can get into the supercars to get driven around.
And there's no additional cost for going on those.
It's all of it is included in the ticket price. Obviously, it's a first come first serve a way of doing it. Then on the other hand, what we realized last year was the 4x4 tracks that we had last year was very, very positive, but it was very, very bad. What do I mean with that? It was very positive that the people that actually went to the 4x4 track loved it.
Absolutely. I got to ride in that the Mercedes-Benz.
Lundewagen.
Yes.
But when I say it was bad, was our signage wasn't great, our shuttle service wasn't great. So you're going to see those kind of things to be improved, because, I mean, that's one of the things we as organizers also have to be very frank about. If we see certain things work, certain things don't work. So the 4x4 village, as we call it this year, is going to be much, much bigger than last year, with many more car manufacturers tied up. We also there, for example, because we're also co-locating the boat and water show, so you're going to see a lot of boats and yachts as well. We have kind of things. We have one thing where we have a Land Rover tied up with a boat manufacturer. You can actually experience the towing capacities of the Land Rover, you can drive it up and down to see if that is something you would like to get into.
And have you got any boats on water?
That was the difficult part. But we're going to have a lot of boats are also beautiful out of the water anyways. So they're going to be co-located. Then we also have what you mentioned before, we made some space available for some car manufacturers to do something different than on the track. So you're going to have dynamic driving experiences. You're going to have some drifting experiences that is done on the skid pad itself. And most importantly, what we didn't have last year is we actually providing a lot of content ourselves. So we're actually bringing a lot of really, really interesting cars to watch with really good drivers that you can follow around on the track. And that is curated by our friends at Goodwood. So Goodwood Festival Speed, if that is a name for you that you know, they're actually helping us to make sure we have really top content on the show.
That's incredible. I think first of all, hats off to you guys for one ticket price, and then the day is kind of you're only going to have to touch your wallet again to buy a beer and a cold drink and a packet of chips for the latte.
Right.
I think that's really, really, it's good, because 9 times out of 10 you go to any kind of event and you host
at
the door
gate,
and then
again.
you don't stop paying. So I just think that really, really is a great thing. And having been to the festival last year, I can only say that this is something that people, even if you're not a car person, believe me, you will enjoy it. There will be something there for you
at
the motoring experience.
Yeah, I think the gyms, as we used to call it before, it's nothing like that. So if you haven't been, it's absolutely nothing like that. It's not the traditional kind of just walk around and look at cars.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very, very different.
The constant sound and the smell, I think that's the one thing where you actually get goosebumps, even if you are not a motorist. I mean, just to feel and experience those old cars, it's quite something. The other thing I forgot to mention is, like, we're also gonna have that show live streamed, so we have cameras all around the show. So if you're sitting and have the beer, or your second or your third beer, you can still experience the show because we have big screens there, and you can actually have commentary that tells you why those certain cars are actually so important for you. So you can actually learn
things. So you'll be live streaming. So if something is happening in portion A and you're in portion Z, you'll be able to see what's happening in portion A, and you're going to have commentators. I see that is something that was said on the website.
Correct.
Which is really, really good. Something that I got really, really excited about, I see Will Kinsman, the head of motorsport content from the Goodwood Race, company, they coming out, but not only for that content, but for there's a classic kind of car show.
So basically we're using our partnership with Goodwood in two ways, and Will Kinsman is a very, very interesting man. I mean, he has got in the UK, he has a team of 20 guys, and they are complete car nerds. I mean,
that's it.
in the best way of the word.
Yeah.
They know everything, and he basically helps us to put together the content, because and we have two areas. The one thing we have kind of a museum. So we're spending a bit of money to making it a very nice museum for the 10 SA Legends, racing legends cars that have a connection to the South African history. And we're going to have it displayed in a very nice way with screens explaining why they are relevant in the South African racing history. Mm-hmm. And the second part is, as we said, is that we basically, those cars that can still race, we're going to race at certain times of the year, of the day.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have your live commentary to understand why those cars are so important. And we're actually working with themes. So, for example, 70 years Ferrari, 50 years of Mercedes AMG, and then so on and so forth. So you're going to see then always themed kind of packages, if you will, going through. And if they're not on the main track, they're going to continue on the little handling track inside.
Yes.
So if you are into seeing interesting cars moving, that's the place where you can go.
Well, I mean, it sounds absolutely amazing. George, just something I wanted to touch on quickly was obviously our involvement with the festival as a digital partner. This is just something that we believe in. We know it's a really, really great event, and being the trusted motoring marketplace, it made natural sense for us to kind of, you know.
Oh, well, we're very proud to partner with what's now the SA Motoring Experience.
Yeah.
You know, as the digital partner, and you know, given Autotrader's kind of positioning as a digital marketing company, you know, we thought we could help in that way, and you know, we're very excited to try and help the show grow, and particularly for the South African motoring public, because you know, everybody in this country drives a car to some degree, and and touches a car almost every day of their lives.
Yeah.
So, you know, the more we can get the message out to those people, the better.
Exactly.
And that's what our intention is with partnering with SA Motoring
Fantastic.
Experience.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have our team on the ground there as well, you know, putting out some content, which is really, really exciting. I see that you guys are going to have flyovers by the Red Lions at least three times a day. That's something that I picked up as well.
Yes.
That's really, really exciting.
Yes. One of our sponsors, or obviously West Bank is our headline sponsor, but we have also some zone sponsors, and one of them is Pure Energy, and they're also sponsoring the Red Line, so they're going to bring those to the
show. Fantastic. So, you know, action on the ground and in the air.
Yes, brilliant.
Constantine, in terms of the OEMs that were involved last year, we were talking obviously outside of the studio just now, but it looks like 99% of the guys who were there last year have come back this year.
Well, we are very happy. We got a lot of new car manufacturers on board that weren't there in 2016. Mm-hmm. Just to name a few, we have Alfa Romeo, we have now Suzuki, we have now Peugeot, we have Renault, we have Kia on the show the first time. Mitsubishi is going to be on the show. please forgive me if I forgot one or two, but there are going to be a lot of more car manufacturers that weren't there in 2016 are now here in 2017.
And what do you think's made these OEMs say, okay, cool, listen, this is an event that we have to be at? Was it on the back of the success of the 2016 event that they actually went, hang on a sec, we might have missed out on something yet?
I think that was part of it. The second thing is we also changed our business model around, very straightforward. Because for me, it is very important to get those car manufacturers on board. So we took a lot more risk on the organizer and less on the actual car manufacturers themselves. But I think there was not one car manufacturer out there that doesn't want to have a national motor show.
Sure.
And because everybody says, yeah, Jim's was good, but the concept wasn't right anymore. But nobody questions the fact that the automotive industry needs a national event. And this is the national event. And this is the only national event that there is from the car manufacturer side. And so none of them, they all agreed that we need to have a show like this, and they liked the concept, and so therefore they are back on the show, and we're very grateful about that.
Fantastic. Just quickly, ticket prices. I don't think we've spoken about that. I know we've spoken about tickets, but ticket prices,
150 rand if you buy them online, 160 if you're at the gate.
Okay.
We are selling already quite a lot. We had some special tickets that already sold out. So you better get your tickets up front, and if you buy your ticket actually online, you actually get free parking as well directly on the site, so we don't charge you extra for parking. So better get your ticket online. It's at
itickets.co.za. And there's obviously a link on your website.
There's
as
a link
well,
on the website, and obviously
motoring.com.
Correct. And obviously, kids are less expensive. And if you, I think, under 12, I think it's
under,
10 rand.
Under 12 was 10 rand, yeah. And I think under 18 was
75
rand.
So ticket pricing is quite competitive, we believe. If you look at the shows that you go to, it's, I think, a very competitive pricing.
Okay, and are you selling passes for the weekend? Because the event is Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Have you got passes, or is it a ticket per day?
No, it's a ticket per day.
It's okay. Nice. It's nice and simple. I mean, I'm on the landing page for the pricing, which is SA Festival of Motoring /tickets, and the pricing table is nice and simple. There's nothing complicated. I mean, the last thing you want is a pricing table that looks like a cell phone contract.
No, exactly. 100% with reams and reams of T's and C's. I think just before we wrap, I wanted to ask: are there any kind of hidden surprises that guess? Not that you can let a cat out the bag now, but I'm assuming there's going to be some fanfare and some things that people would not expect to see.
Well, there wouldn't be hidden surprises if I would tell you.
No, exactly. So we're going to keep them hidden.
There are going to be certain things happening that I cannot talk about at this point yet.
Okay. Well, that's always good.
So come and see what that is.
And then just the last question: are we going to see any kind of electric vehicles at
I don't think in 2007. So you're going to see some technology, some of the car manufacturers showcasing some of their really high end technology, like self parking and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to see in 2017. We're not going to see that many electric vehicles. I think this will going to come in 2018. Because then I think the topic is going to be much more relevant than in 2017.
That's good enough for me.
Yeah, good enough for me too.
It's just around the corner.
You know, thank you very much. Please hang around. I don't know if you've got a shoot. I know you're a really, really busy man, and 3 weeks to go. I'm sure there's some fires that need putting out with the events. But I mean, you guys ran a smooth operation last year, and I cannot wait to experience the experience this year. So thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
It's only a pleasure. Right. Mr. Mini?
Yes, sir.
Which one?
I know you're going to. I knew that was coming. But let's jump over to Lawrence. And Lawrence, yeah, let's unpack this Peugeot 300. Was it the 3008? Is it the 3008? What is the naming convention so that I can sound like a pro when I'm on the radio?
Okay, so yeah, last week Peugeot South Africa unveiled, or we had launch of the all new 3008.
Okay.
You can't call it a 008 because Universal Studios gets all up in arms about James Bond franchise and whatnot.
Oh gosh!
But it's actually funny.
So all the 00s are off the table.
Pretty much, yeah. It looks like a little infinity symbol on the back. So I like to call it a 2 Infinity 8.
2 Infinity 8.
So it's a 3 Infinity 8. So yeah, this the 3008, if you want to call it that, is the middle child of this range of vehicles that Peugeot is going to be bringing in. So we've got the 2008 currently, 3008 just hit the market, and next year we get the 5 2000 or the 3000
2008.
Sorry, it's the 5008. It's the big daddy.
Yeah.
But if you can't wait for that, definitely go have a look at the 3008. It is an absolutely amazing machine.
Yeah.
When you you look at what they're offering as a standard package,
yeah,
versus what the other guys have currently got on the market, they are leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else.
Really, yeah. And I mean, what are we comparing this vehicle to? So who's this up against?
Your Hyundai, Kia, okay. Audi.
So the Sportage, yeah, the Tucson, yeah, the likes of those.
It's a beautiful car. I have to say, there is not a flat surface on this thing. It's curves and lines, and you know, simple things like around the headlights.
Yeah.
You would expect like a headlight cluster to be a flat piece of glass. This, yes, thing actually has like the piece of the bumper actually juts up into the glass.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of it now. It really, really does look, yeah, really, really modern style.
You've got this blacked out roof, and then along the roof you've got brushed stainless steel.
Sure.
That sort of ties everything together. You know, they've got the LED tail lights, they've got like that tiger claw thing, yeah, that they've been doing on
and
all of their
and
cars.
And this is launching now in August.
It is launched already.
Okay,
it should be on dealership floors.
And I see that this one, European Car of the Year 2017.
One European
in
Car
March.
Of the Year. And it absolutely deserves that accolade. It's an absolutely amazing drive. 1.6 turbocharged engine. We're only going to get, at the moment, the 1.6 turbocharged petrol with the 6-speed auto. We might see the 1.2 next year. And we are definitely getting diesel derivatives next year.
All right.
Why?
And that's the one of my niggles.
Why are they even still making diesel?
Well, we're getting it. I didn't say the rest of the world's going to get it.
Oh, so let's send the diesels to Africa.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Like, wow. Yeah.
Why send the diesels here?
So, as it stands at the moment, we're probably only going to see those in the second quarter of 2018.
Okay.
But the outside of the car is pretty.
Yes.
But because you spend 90% of your time inside your car,
yeah,
that's where they've really focused. I mean, it is, you get in and you get this tiny little steering wheel.
Yeah.
You don't look through it at your clocks. You look over it.
It's got a flat top steering wheel. So
flat top and flat bottom. It is really weird when you
first
hold
it. Looks like a little Formula One steering wheel.
So it's like Knight Rider.
Very much so.
Yeah.
It has quilted leather seats with massage functions. And then the number one thing that I suppose is the party piece of the interior is the iCockpit.
Well, that's what I was just about to ask you.
It is their version of Audi's virtual cockpit.
So it's full digital analog display.
It's something else to play with. It really is. And plus, that's 12.5 inches.
Yep.
And then the infotainment screen is another 8 inches. And the two are sort of linked together. So you can have your navigation there, and you can move it from one screen
to the next. So you just like drag and drop, and
the buttons on the steering wheel.
Yeah. So tell me something, is the screen touchscreen?
Yes, everything's
touchscreen.
Brilliant. That's fantastic.
And then you have, of course, if you don't feel like getting fingerprints on the glass, you have these brushed aluminium like piano keys,
yeah,
in the center console. Everything you touch just is, it's class.
That's brilliant, because, you know, I mean, a French car, yes?
Yes.
Yes,
French car.
Oui.
And, you know, I'm half German, so don't take me out for saying this, Constantine. But the Germans need to stop this center console wheel thingy.
Yes. Yeah. Were you, when did we speak about this?
Yes, I drove the BMW X, the new X5.
Yes.
And, you know, I can't believe that they've still got this flipping wheel thingy in the middle. You know, so touchscreens, I think the next X5 will probably have touchscreens.
And what's nice about the 3008 is that the screens are all angled towards the driver.
Okay.
And this is something I've picked up in other cars as well. In certain lighting conditions, you've got an LCD screen.
Yeah,
it goes completely black.
Yeah.
You can't see anything if it's just slightly angled away from. These are all angled directly towards you. We're actually at this point in time, we only have the Allure and the GT line.
That's what I was just going to ask you. What finishes are we getting?
The Active, which they call their entry level, but it's actually not even an entry level because it still has more standard specification than any of the other manufacturers.
Okay.
So we only tested the Allure and the GT line. The Allure came in at 399,000, and the GT line at 499. So 400,000, 500,000.
Yeah, 499.
They then have the Active, which is coming, and then they have the Allure Plus and the GT Line Plus. The pricing is on our story. Let's go.
The back, those lights you're talking about,
look a little bit like a Ford Mustang.
I did notice that, but it's actually, it extends over the top of the light.
Yeah.
So it's actually like a tiger claw mark. Yeah. So it's
monster.
Like a slash, yeah.
Sure, it's very looks very much like the Tucson, hey? I mean, I'm very impressed with the Tucson shape now.
Yeah.
I didn't like the previous
one. It's the safe design that the motor manufacturers say. They're all... If that's what a car looks like, that's what it's supposed to be, and they all sort of follow the same shape.
Exactly. And in interior cockpits, I mean, we drove the Alex, I drove the Alex 500 Lexus the other day. The Lexus, yes. Mm-hmm. Beautiful car. And this cockpit very much resembles that Alex, or maybe the other way around, I don't know. But that little kind of...
Stop your cell phone from falling out.
Looks very, very cool.
And that's the technology. When just talking about cell phones, there is a NFC wireless charging
plate.
And it is something that most manufacturers are only now starting to think about. That was in the 2008, and it sort of features in many of the others.
And that's already becoming old technology, hey?
Yeah.
That charging plate.
Wireless charging.
Now the next thing is wireless charging. You can leave your phone here and...
So what will it charge? Over Bluetooth? Or no. How's
NFC, near-field communication.
Near-field communications. So the charging plate, it's already not integrated into cars and into homes, and it's already old technology.
So you just get home, throw your phone on the table, and it's charging.
Well,
this
you
is
don't
the universe that I definitely need to live
in. Your house, you anywhere in your phone's charging.
What's nice about that is if you extrapolate that technology, you drive your electric car into the garage.
You don't need to plug anything in.
It charges in the garage.
And you probably don't even have to take your phone out the car because you can receive the phone calls on your watch
it's all coming
while your robot's cooked you dinner. Just like that. You know what? This whole tech thing, I've always kind of like shunned it off. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's...
You know what, it all goes back to, if you're not going to be on board, you're going to be left behind on the island.
And I'm fully on board. My wallet's not on board yet, but I'm fully on board. I want to have a car that parks itself.
I suppose at the end of the day, that is really what Peugeot... Because I actually had a chat with the guy that's in charge there, and he said that is what Peugeot is aiming to do, is to give you all of that premium, you know, functionality at a lesser price than what you're going to see. So you're getting what you pay for. With no options left.
Okay, well, I suppose Tyron's going to cut me off just now. But in 60 seconds, Peugeot and reliability.
That is one of their main focuses, and it is something they have been working on. And, yeah, when you look at the warranty plans and stuff, you know, four-year 60,000 service plan, 300,000 kilometer warranty. Then they offer a 300,000 roadside assistance and a 12-year anti-perforation warranty. It's just they're offering so much more than what the others, and it's all included in the price.
Okay. They so they're starting all to stand behind the car.
Their service centers are good. Their spares backup is there. That whole notion of it's a French car, if it breaks, you know, pawn your house, it doesn't exist anymore.
Take it to a scrapyard, get a certificate, and then you can go to Fiat, and you can get 40,000 rand discount off your next route. Just like
a little bit of advertising.
There we go, 100%. So, listen, yes, I am. Lawrence, thanks for that. There is the article on our site yet?
It should be live this morning.
The article should be live this morning, so go and check it out on autotrader.co.za. And, yes, this takes us into our tech segment, and we've got exactly 9 minutes to talk tech, George. And this is something that is really, really becoming exciting, and I mention it a lot. And I just think it's where we're at. And, obviously, Elon Musk is kind of smashing the lights out. He's really, you know, moonshotting and doing what he needs to do. But I saw an article the other day, and I don't know why the link's not working anymore, but about the features of the inside of the Tesla Model 3. Mm. And what struck me was that it's a keyless entry system, and you will actually open the car with your phone. It will have you'll have a Tesla app, and the app will open the vehicle.
Well, this car has no buttons.
Yes.
So there's no buttons inside. And the other thing is they're trying to get rid of all mechanical moving parts.
So everything's going to be electric.
Everything will be electric or electronic. Not even the, you know, you get into a car and you move the air vents.
Yes.
There's no mechanical air vent moving in that car.
So you'll adjust it.
You adjust it on the touchscreen if you want the air. So there's a slot in the dash.
Yes.
And the air comes through the slot. and the mechanical part inside that those ducts are controlled by the touchscreen. So
well, they are. They're only in. You know, you talk about having no buttons. I believe that obviously it's got a steering wheel, which you don't even have to use. Sometimes.
It's got the two buttons on the steering wheel,
but that's to obviously navigate the screen.
Well, apparently you can set it up the way you to navigate the screen. You can set it up to perform functions that you want it to perform.
But other than that, there's nothing else. There's not even a center console. There's just a screen, and you know.
Well, there's a center console. There's just no buttons on.
There's no buttons on it.
Yeah.
So and obviously you can drive. Everything is driven then off this
off the touchscreen. Also, the difference between the Model S and the Model 3 is the touchscreen now was portrait. It's now moved to being landscape. And their thinking around the landscape screen is that they want, on the advent of self-driving cars, the ability for the passengers to interact with the screen, and with a portrait screen, it became it would become difficult.
Yeah. So that obviously they'll be able to split the screen then. So the passenger, well, I'm assuming.
Anything's possible with that screen, because all that Tesla has to do is any upgrades to the car can be done via America in wherever the car's, you know,
Wi-Fi
systems sit. And you can upgrade the car like your cell phone over the internet.
That's absolutely amazing. You know, I've obviously been on to their website and I get their newsletters, but if I have a look at, if I just have a look at their warranties on their vehicles, so they've got a 4-year, 50,000-mile limited vehicle warranty, then they've got an 8-year, 100,000-mile battery warranty, and an 8-year, 120,000-mile battery warranty on the long range. Obviously, that's on the battery alone. But I read somewhere as well that you actually have do you have to rent the batteries, or does it come part of the vehicle? And I'm not saying that's what Tesla's
no, I mean, I think the batteries come as part of the vehicle, but they are working on a system where you could switch the batteries out at their supercharging stations.
Okay.
I don't think they're doing it yet, but they proved that when you stop at a supercharging station, you can switch out a Tesla's battery 3 times in the time that it takes to fill a normal car with fuel.
With fuel. So you can replace that battery 3 times, essentially. Yeah,
and the only reason to do that is to not have to wait for 45 minutes for the battery to charge, is you can switch it out and it takes 5 minutes. And then you're on your way.
9 times out of 10, if you're doing a long drive anyway, you're going to stop for an hour and a half. So, I mean, you can get that car fully charged again.
Yeah,
you
know, 45
while you're
minutes.
Waiting, even in 45 minutes.
But the thing, I mean, somebody said, well, what if the car comes to a country that doesn't have these charging stations around? Any house that has electricity can charge their car.
Yes.
So, you know, you don't necessarily have to have the charging station in order to own one.
Yeah. What is the range that he's stating?
So it's the long range model goes 320 kilometers, and the short range one I think is 280.
It really is a good looking vehicle. I really like the look of this thing.
Tesla is so far ahead of its game. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and then obviously there's the likes of some of the other manufacturers that are following suit. I see BMW have to focus on electric green cars. The new i8 Roadster, the Mini E, and the electric X3 are on their way, which is quite interesting. And a little what me excited about this article was that an electric Mini heads into 2019, and we will be built in their Oxford factory.
Wow.
And it's just what I was saying earlier. The guys, if you're not on board, you're going to get left behind on the island. And any motor manufacturer that isn't going to be concentrating on an electric car of some sort, Stone Age.
Yeah, you're going to be Stone Age. Sorry, Lawrence just pointed out to me that I was talking in kilometers when it should be miles. So the electric range is 220 miles.
220 miles.
That's the average range.
News article that was up and about the Tesla Model S driving 1,000 kilometers on a single charge.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of like, you know,
under
just
laboratory conditions.
Touching the accelerator. Yeah. But, you know, the last time we spoke about the Tesla, they've got this technology to recharge the battery. So when you take your foot off the accelerator, the car doesn't freewheel.
Yes, okay.
It actually brakes.
Yeah.
And that braking effect.
So that was, you aligned that to the Scaly Electric's vehicle.
It was
your thumb off the throttle that vehicle would actually slow stop. Down, yeah.
So you can switch that on and off, but it recharges the battery and gets more mileage out of the car.
That's absolutely insane. Well, I can't wait. I'd love to know when the first one's going to hit the shores here in South Africa.
Well, Musk has put the Model 3 on the South Africa list. So
I see it's on the list. I also see he's had a number of obviously cancellations because some guys don't want to wait as long to get the vehicle. But
more for everyone else.
It is more for everybody else, and even with that, he's still going to. You know, the supply numbers, I think it's 455,000 vehicles.
I'd like to believe that electric car is going to become like a cell phone in the sense that it's going to become a fashion statement. Oh, you still drive diesel? Oh, no.
Well, so,
you can't come to my house, you know.
So, you know, at the moment a car isn't a device or an appliance.
Mm.
It's not an appliance like a washing machine or a fridge. I think it's going to become like a device or an appliance. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
And you have to have the latest one, otherwise you're just not going to be keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah, well, it just depends what they're going to cost when they land here. That's the scary thing.
Well, 35,000 US, and depending on what Constance said earlier in terms of the taxes.
Yeah.
So, you know, if the government wants to get on board with this, slash those taxes down.
Slash those taxes down, and let's make electric vehicles.
Now, CBMW says by 2025 they want 15 to 25% of their sales to be electric vehicles.
They're going the right way.
Well, definitely. I mean, Volvo, 2019, all their, you know, they're going to, well, not.
It's a race.
They're going to have, you know, hybrids in. So, you know, it is a race.
And all it's going to take is a government official to say, right, no more petrol cars or diesel cars within the city limits.
I just wonder how that would work
in the
this
city
centre. We've got a minute left, so let's
They did it in Mexico.
Well, again, go back to fiber to the home and what we've seen over the last couple of years. It's not impossible. If the government gets on board, it's absolutely not impossible to build the infrastructure properly, you know.
Yeah.
So I reckon they'll be forced to build the infrastructure, because petrol cars are just going to become more and more expensive as the volumes drop.
Yeah, exactly. Well, guys, on that note, Lawrence, thanks very much for being in studio.
Not a
George,
problem,
always a pleasure.
Good time.
Constantine, thanks so much, and we cannot wait. 1st to the 3rd of September, SA Motoring Experience at Kyalami. Tickets on rticket.co.za.
Only $150. Really not
bucks,
expensive.
And all the information and everything that we've spoken about today is on safestivalofmotoring.com, which is the official website, and we wish you all the best, and we cannot wait to experience the experience.
Thank you. See you there.
Yeah, 100%, guys. Thank you. And then on that note, here's Lucky Charms.
This is CliffCentral.com.